We'll kick it off.
All right, thank you. Well, welcome everyone. I see Renee Hoy and the folks who put together Catalan's College can now work for Delta Airlines. We are in an oversold position. We're not going to ask part of you to leave before we depart. But this is an exciting time in agriculture. How many of you think agriculture is going to be the same 5 years from now as it was 5 years ago? Anybody? Okay, so the world is changing. What are you doing to change because the world you operate in is now different? And that's what we're going to talk about today. Not what those answers are. All the answers that we know for a fact, we've printed in your book. But the process by which we think about the world we operate in, and we think about our operation and how we make decisions, it's the process that's going to keep going. Business planning, we've always talked about, we need a roadmap to get someplace. Hell, we don't know where we're going. Why does it matter? Right? We need a compass. We need a sense of direction in our operation and something that we can adjust as things go. We're going to talk about that. We're going to look at some real relevant, real-life examples that we're dealing with. Bioeconomy is one of them. Ethanol and the renewable fuel standard. The world has changed. When we change policy to start supporting and encouraging renewable fuels rather than not, the world has changed just by the fact that the president can stand on TV and say the word lignocellulosic. That's a pretty good task in and of itself, but it does point to a different world. What about the marketplace? Not just the product and quality grades and things that are influenced by genetics and nutrition, things that you do well, but things that information and proof of information, like age verification and the process to do that, has value. Certainly, proof has more value than the product, perhaps. How do you adjust to those things? And then finally, we're in a much more volatile world. Corn market's a good example. A lot of change in a short period of time. The cattle market since early 2003 was volatile. There's a lot more risk. We're now in the process of tying the corn market, which of course feeder cattle prices are tied to, and we're linking all that into the world petroleum markets. How does that impact your operation? And are you ready for it? What strategies might work in that process? So that's kind of an overview of some of the things we're going to talk about today. We're going to try to lead you through that process, maybe more as a coach. Anything you take out of here, you're going to have to earn, right? That's a blank sheet of paper. If you don't have a pen, we will try to get you one. But this is going to be a working session. And with that in mind, we're going to sort you. Not by height, not by IQ, okay, so don't be nervous, but by region. Because I think what you'll find is that the answers or these strategies that seem to make sense differ depending on where you're located and what your operation's about. So, as a starting point, how many of you here are from what I'd call, consider yourselves the southeast or the eastern U.S.? Raise your hands. Okay, why don't you folks all move over to these tables over here? Pick up. All over there. If you're from the southeast, you're in part of the Next up, this, hell, it's everywhere, so don't touch it on me. Okay, the rest of you, if you want to start filling in or find a seat, I think they were going to bring some more chairs in. Now, we're going to sort you again north to south. So, we've had ethanol around for a long time, not counting Mr. Daniels and Mr. Beam and those guys, the corn-based ethanol we burn. But it's really taken off here in the last few years, pretty rapid growth. This is that same exact graph, but with the target that President Bush laid out for us of 35 billion gallons by the year 2017. So, we've been growing along here. Remember that last graph? This looked like a pretty steep line. But if we're going to reach that goal, we got a lot of ground to cover. Okay? Now, right now corn is the primary source. I think you're all aware of that. A lot of corn going into it now. The current technology, and it's evolved, but it used to be around 2.7 gallons per bushel. We've got a lot of plants running at 3 gallons per bushel. To get, if it were all corn, to produce 35, you'd need 12 billion bushels of corn, right? How much corn did we produce last year? 10.7. Okay? So, that says, one, we're going to plant a heck of a lot more corn, and two, we're going to be looking for other sources, and that's where the cellulose and other sources of ethanol come into play. Where are the ethanol plants? Again, most of you probably are familiar with this graph. This one's way out of date. It's August 30th of 2006. The blue ones are those plants in operation. It's up over 100, I think 106 or 108 that are in operation. The red are those under construction. The green are the ones that are planned. And, of course, a lot of it started in the Corn Belt, kind of the Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, back here over in Illinois. Down here in Panhandle, Texas, there's some under construction, and throughout you can see the red ones. The green ones are popping up in places like North Carolina and Pennsylvania and Arkansas and Montana and so on. And when you ask those people where they're going to get their corn, what do they tell you?
Iowa.
They're going to get it from Iowa. This is Iowa. And again, this one's way out of date. It was Thanksgiving of last fall. This number is now closer to 70 plants. We have about 27 in production. We've got another 6 or 7 under construction. And the other, whatever that gives us, 25 to 30 on the books or planned. That's anywhere from have the permits, have the money ready to break ground, to some announced a couple of weeks ago that were introduced themselves as a small capital company hoping to raise the money to build plants. So they may be a little further down the path. But the point is, if all of these come true, just those within the boundary of Iowa, we would produce 129% of last year's corn crop. So Iowa, again, is going to have to produce a lot more corn to feed that plant. And then this is the point where I typically ask the Iowegians, how many of you think agriculture will be the same 5 years from now as it was 5 years ago? So keep this graph in mind as we progress. How much corn might we need? These are some estimates from my colleague, Dr. Bob Wisner, who does our grain analyst at Iowa analysis. The blue line is if China is not, with China and importing, or not corn importing. So China's currently the world's second largest exporter of corn. There's been talk for years that China would stop exporting and start importing. The blue line says out here by 2011, looking at those circles, we would need about 18 million more acres, and if China begins to import, we need about 22 or 23 million more acres of corn. We plant about 80 million, this would get us up, you know, closer to 95 or 100 million acres of corn, so quite a bit more corn ground. How much can ethanol plants afford to pay? This is some work out of Minnesota, the USDA. There was a recent study about Iowa State. As a benchmark, all of these studies look at $60 oil. I realize we're below that now, but back from, you know, several months, we were at $60 crude oil prices. And that says that with $60 crude oil, USDA's cost of production says they could pay $4.50 for corn. The Minnesota cost of production would be about $4 for corn. The Iowa State study was about $4 for corn in a $60 oil world. Now, what's interesting about this, and this, I'll go back to the Iowa State study I'm familiar with, it assumed that there was no value to ethanol other than what it was worth relative to gasoline. So there's no oxygenate value, there was no, the incentive was still, you didn't have to produce more mandate. So, and it's worth two-thirds the value of gasoline just on BTUs. Well, if you do that, then what happens in a world that goes, if there's enough demand to use all the ethanol, corn prices are driven almost solely by oil price. Not by acres, because the oil market's nearly infinite compared to the amount of corn we produce. Not by livestock feed, because it's a drop in the bucket next to what we'll be processing. And so corn prices in that world, if that were to happen, would be driven almost entirely by oil prices. Okay? Speaking of corn prices, in case Rick Van Winkle's in the room and just woke up. The blue line is 2006. Here is about Labor Day time period, and this, of course, has shot up and has come up since then. This, of course, is yearly prices. Notice there is a relationship, but one goes up, the other goes down, right? But thank God we've got distiller's grains to bail us out. This is what happens to the price of dry distiller's grains. Okay. At least thus far, distiller's grains are a substitute. As the price of corn finally took off, other markets, the dairy industry and others, start saying, that's pretty good feed, and they've driven the price up. Now, if you go back to that U.S. map, if we have all of those plants come online, at some point we saturate those markets, and this may not track as closely to corn. So let's talk about distiller's grains for a moment. If we stop at 5.5 billion bushels of corn, and so that's around, take that times, you know, 2.7 to 3, that's about, what, 15, 16 million gallons of, billion gallons of ethanol. It says we produce almost 47 million tons of distiller's grains on an air-dry basis, 90% dry matter. And this is some real simple figures for Dr. Wisner, but if you took every steer and heifer on feed in the U.S. and it was included at 20% of the ration on a dry matter basis, they'd use about 7 billion tons. If you fed every dairy cow in the U.S. 20% of her dry matter, there'd be another 6 million tons. And if you fed all the hogs in the U.S. 15%, there's another 7 million tons. So the demand out there currently would be for about 20 million. We're going to have about 47 if all those plants come online.
So as I tell some people in Iowa, using and feeding these filter strains is a defensive move because otherwise the stuff is going to cover you up. So what's some of the implications from this? Here's your situation. On your, open up your book there, first page, it says situation. I, you know, fairly safe to say we're going to produce more ethanol, and I think it's more corn-based ethanol, that's going to give us more distiller's grains. That has led to, and I think will continue to, corn prices higher than we have historically seen. The last 10 years, the Omaha average corn price has been about $2.09. Okay? What did I tell you the models predicted an ethanol world corn price would be? $4. So we got the opportunity here, it appears, to go from a history of $2 in Omaha to a future of $4 potentially as this market grows. That doesn't mean it will be nice and smooth and we're almost at $4, so we just stop and it stays there. Anybody really think that might happen? We just kind of go up and level off and it never changes. Yeah. We're seeing higher land prices. We're at record high land prices in Iowa now. That includes not only corn ground, but I think it's going to pressure pasture ground. I was in northwest Missouri a few weeks ago, and this guy must really love his beef cows because he had a pasture out there that he had built brand new terraces. He'd taken the gullies and smoothed them out into nice, big, wide waterways, and he even pushed out some of the stumps in that pasture. You guys don't get it, do you? Cows will never see that, right? We are converting pasture ground to corn ground as we speak in places that can grow corn. Now, places that can grow corn very well, we're probably going to see cows, you know, may have some advantage possibly. But I think we're going to see higher land prices, I think lower calf prices than we had in the $2 world. Right? Corn is $4 versus $2. I think we got lower calf prices. Where's the fun in all of this if you're in the cow business? I think, and Stroh will talk a little bit about this later, I think we're going to end up with slightly lighter carcass weights because those last few pounds on cost to gain are the most expensive. They're even more expensive if corn is $4 rather than $2. We may not put those last few on. What does that do to grading? What does that do to the number of choice cattle out there if we don't feed them that last week or 2 weeks? What does that do to the choice select spread since there's a pretty strong demand for choice cattle? How does that factor back into your operation? Okay, now it's your time to go work. I propose a situation. What did I leave off that list? What did I leave off that list? As far as the situation, the current cattle here.
Cattle.
So enter fertilizer price impact in corn. Oops, I'm going to have to go this way. Okay, and what about fertilizer price? Higher? Lower? Just simply exist, you think it'd be higher, all right. Anything else that kind of fits this ethanol world situation? Yes, sir.
It'll be more expensive to feed chickens than hogs, which should potentially drive the price of our competition meat products.
Okay. Good point. Back here.
Higher phosphorus manure.
Okay. I'm going to need a second page here, but nutrient management. Okay.
Fewer calf beds.
Fewer calf beds?
Good point. You're going to feed $4 corn, you'd like to start with an 800 pounder rather than a 400 pounder. Okay? And that would be an indication of the demand from feedlots wanting perhaps bigger cattle, something you would factor down the risk group.
Less beef.
What's that?
Less beef because we're going to kill this cattle earlier.
We're going to reduce the supply of all beef, the beef included, right? I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I'm the economist here. Let's be higher prices.
You went out on a limb?
Yeah. Okay, we can go on and on here all day. I'll go back to my original challenge. What are you going to do about it? On your operations. This is not a policy issue. This is what are you going to do at home, given your resources, because the world that you operate in is now different than it was. Visit among yourselves. Start coming up with some ideas. What we're looking at here on this page, this goes back to the old Harvard Business School SWOT analysis. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. The way I was taught to do that is the strengths and weaknesses are things internal to your firm. What do you have unique to your operation as a strength? Okay? Or there's a weakness that you may need to think about plugging up. The external factors are opportunities and the threats. Those are things like this world that's changing, but within your operation is that a threat? Higher corn price, is that an opportunity or a threat? Part of it depends on if you raise corn, probably. Right? Higher land prices, is that an opportunity? If you own all your land, it might be. If you rent all your land, it might not be. So every operation is going to be a little different. But there's also regional differences, and that's why we sorted you earlier to start thinking through some of these. So first off, we're going to identify this, and then we're going to come back and talk about some strategies to try to think about implementing on your farm to address these strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So, visit among yourselves, start taking notes, listen to some of the good ideas around the table. We'll come back to you in a little bit.
Thank you.
Okay, we got three people that wrote something down. Very quickly, jot down something in each one of those boxes. Is we're going to move to strategies next, but what's a strength, what's a weakness, what's an opportunity, what's a threat?
So just write those things down real quick. You know, on a 1 to 10 scale, you think they're 1 or 10 or 5 or 7. That's the type of quick thinking we need you to do.
And those would be strengths or weaknesses, because those are internal to your operation.
Right.
Your financial position, the genetics you have, whether you own the land, quality of your grass, those are all things you have. And you see those as a strength or weakness entering this world.
So if your cattle will graze really easily and then maybe this brand new world that John described, where the choice select spread is going to widen out, that's a real strength for your operation. If you have a different type of cattle, like you do in South Texas, maybe that's not as strong a position. Opportunities and threats. If you're near one of those circles that John had up there, of course, certainly in the short run, that's a tremendous opportunity for you.
Okay, Howard, yes, sir.
Just a quick question for my mind. Earlier, when you showed the chart of the ethanol profitability, we come up with a $4 looking forward. Does that include subsidy as we know it today, or is that no subsidy included?
That's as we know it today, 51 cents a gallon.
Okay, so if the subsidy doesn't go away, that will change.
Right. Exactly. That's
my fault. Tonight at the bar, we'll be taking bets on what's going to happen.
Right. This is the room. We are starting to pull. Okay, I'm going to start over here. We're going to start in the southeast, since your grace is enough to host this conference. I want somebody at that first table to give me a strength in their operation. Yes, sir.
Gorgeous.
Oranges.
Another string. Second table.
Vibra.
Use of byproducts. Okay, next table. Another strain.
Herd and health.
Herd and health. That might be unique to the individual, you suppose. Okay, now let's go. All right, right here.
Reputation cattle?
Yeah,
reputation cattle. All right, now we're going to start right here with a weakness.
As they build up, as I overheard of this and knowing Craig, as they build a dependency on a co-product, how reliable will it be? It's not very reliable right now. Just wait a little bit, Craig.
So the dependency on a supplier rather than raising your own feed stores. Right. Okay, next table, another weakness.
Jerry, what do you got? What's the weakness?
Access to a backing player.
Access to
hacker. We will pick on those of you who know the help, right? Charles?
All right, next table back. Another weakness.
Transportation.
Okay, shifting gears again. Over here. Right here, opportunity for growth of the beef stocker operations. All right. This is because the feedlots are now going to want heavier cattle, right? There's a demand for stalkers. Next table back, another opportunity.
More cost means for getting the byproducts of the cattle.
A low cost means for delivery. Okay, next table back. Another opportunity. Yes, sir. Back room.
Increased grazing rate.
Right.
You own grazing ground.
All right. So increased grazing rates.
Over. Do you have one?
Yeah, just from irrigated grass or alfalfa to corn.
So a shift from grass to corn?
Or alfalfa.
Okay. All right, last row. The project will start with you next time. We need some threats. First table.
Other
prices
for food and yes. Okay. Look at it.
Next one. Another threat.
I think you could say escalating energy costs as corn becomes a soon down fuel, all energy costs are rising by oil as well.
Okay. Next table.
Higher feed
going from lower prices to cans. Okay, we got lower cans, let's put higher feed. Okay, last table. What's that? Pollution? Okay, just quickly looking up there at what we have, I'm sure there's several others. Are there any of those that appear to be in conflict with one another? Okay, we've got low-cost delivery of distillers as being an opportunity, and we got higher transportation costs as being a weakness. But that's a weakness for that operation. But for somebody else, and I'm curious, is this low-cost delivery system is the opportunity that's out there. If they've got something they want to patent, I'll be happy to talk to them. Higher pasture rental rates. Is that an opportunity for these guys that are buying your grass by the head or the month?
No, they were talking about not a higher rate, John. They were talking about increasing carrying capacity on the pasture.
Yeah, that was my point. So is this an unanimous one that this is a real opportunity as these rates go up?
Yeah.
It depends on which side of the picture on, exactly. Yeah, you can all set up a conflict in here, instead of any of them. What's that?
Access to
factor transportation, those are in some regards redundant, right? And that's unique to where you are. If you're within sight of the factor, that's probably not your biggest worry. But the point I'm trying to make here is, one, every one of these is going to be different for someone, but it's still a good way to think through your operation as well as think through how you view the world. I saw some disagreements within some of the tables, whether some of these were opportunities or not, whether they were threats or not. And so that's certainly going to be the case. How many of you picked up some ideas you hadn't thought about? Yeah. The other thing I'd encourage you to do, well, this is unique to your operation, the idea of brainstorming with some of your peers is a good idea. Right? Life is too short to make all the mistakes by yourself. Learn from somebody else's. Okay, now the next step is, and I heard you jump into this already, what you wrote down on yours, and as you talk among yourselves, what's a strategy, what's something you can do within your operation, a strategy that will build on your strengths or plug a weakness, capture an opportunity, or block a threat? What do you do about it? You've identified these. What do you do about it? So let's take a few minutes to start. And again, I heard many of you talking about this already, but what do you do?
Yeah.
this thing going. Now, who's got the strategy that's going to tackle those things? Okay. One that says we're going to have more corn acres and we're going to have available distillers grains, and we're going to harvest more corn stalks and mix them with gluten and feed that instead of corn. So feed what you've got is one. In the back of the room, the strategy.
Where are you going to get corn stalks at?
We're going to produce 20 million acres more corn. You're going to have to outfit the ethanol plants to get it, and they'll give that up for a price. Right? And being provided, they'll sell anything for a price. and
some prices are going down all the time. I mean, we'll make a side price for that product, put back in January,
lose the money off. And that's a good question. And some people won't, and some people will, who's ahead of the state will adjust. The thing we're talking about here is a strategy that you do long term. So for somebody who says, I'm going to focus on feeding distillers grains and corn stalks, he's going to need a secure source of corn stalks long term. He's going to need to have a long term method of feeding that. It's not the price today and adjusting the ration. That's where he's betting his future. And if it's in a neighborhood that won't sell stocks, it ain't going to work.
Yeah, this table had a really good
idea. Okay, right here. Change from a cut-back operation back to a stocker operation. That's a change of strategy. All right. Where are you going to get the gas? Why the gas? Okay, back here.
Change my genetics
and eventually
a calf that'll be the great source of small
leftover weight loss. All right, got change genetics to a calf that'll train well at a lower weight. Okay, so that's a strategic change in the genetics.
You got it. Get the whole weight. Raise more corn stocks. So you
can
call your cows corn stocks.
And raise more corn stocks. And that means putting wheels that are taking where the corn stalks are, if need be.
Can you summer more cows in?
Yeah.
Summer.
Corn stalks. So you're going to free up the grass, you don't have to maintain, you move the break out from winter feed. Okay, so we can go out here forever, and the idea is we do try to leave no stone unturned. Okay? I saw people turning up their nose at one idea or another. The question is, does it work for you? Have you thought it out, or do you need the information to make that decision? And is that the right strategy for you going forward? That's what we're talking about. And our question came up, and just very quickly, and we're going to move on to the next speaker. So, Stro, if you want to switch and put your slides up there. The question came up about cellulosic ethanol. How far away are we? I'm not the expert on this, but I know some people that are, and this is not the gospel, but one researcher said 5 years away. So that's been my story for the last 15 years. We have a plant in Iowa that is being built that will be cellulosic. It will come, the expansion will be complete in 2009. They're going to start out burning corn stalks. We've already got landlords signing up to sell corn stalks to that plant, and then they will start converting in a later date. Now, what else uses land? Let's work for other sources of cellulose. Right? Grass. What else uses grass? Cows. If we crack the code on cellulose, regions like this and to the southeast that can grow a lot of grass may be facing the same challenges our Corn Belt buddies are on pasture competition at some point. So again, looking down the road, how is that going to change as the world shifts again? So, okay, we're going to try to keep this going here. We're going to turn it over to Stroke.